Hello, and welcome to Original Alliance, the podcast where we talk to original people with original ideas living the creative life. Today, we're really excited to be talking with a Seattle syncaustic artist, Alicia Torme. Alicia studied at Seattle Art Institute and Pratt Fine Arts Center and was chosen for an international design internship in Prague. She's exhibited her work all over the country and abroad. She's been written up in pretty much any number of journals and publications, including a cover feature in Professional Artist Magazine. Here in Seattle, she's represented by Hall Spatzoff Gallery and the Seattle Art Museum Gallery. And on the East Coast, you can find her in Boston's Chase Young Gallery. If that's not enough, she's also a highly sought-after instructor and a private tutor, and she's recently released a series of online instructional videos. Hello, Alicia.
Hello.
And welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Tell us a little bit, if you would, how did you get started as an artist? Were you always interested in art?
Oh my goodness. Yes. You know, ever since I was a kid. But I'm from a big family and a creative family. But a lot of my siblings fell on the musical side of creativity. And I was always drawing and painting and making and busy. And so from an early age, I think I was 9 when my parents put me in my first art class, like a formal art class. And I've been making art ever since. And wasn't until I was in my early 20s that people actually started wanting to buy what I was making. And then I realized, oh, this is a thing.
Right.
This could be my life. And so I've always been an artist in some capacity. Whatever job I was doing, it was there was some art or design element to it.
Right. So, but the professional artist thing, did that take time to kick off? Did you kind of, did you just jump into it, or did, was it kind of a transition for you from having a different job and then you transitioned into full-time art?
My full-time jobs were art related. So I was a designer. I was a professional illustrator. I did a lot of art licensing. So I felt like those were professional art positions.
Absolutely.
And then one day I just had this epiphany when I was in my painting studio, just making art for myself, not art for hire. And I thought, this feels so blissful. This feels so natural. And this, I just feel like I'm my best self right here in this space. How can I design my life so that this is how a majority of my time is spent in this physical space, but also this headspace? And so I just started backing away from my professional art licensing obligations and really moving deeper into my art practice where I was really dedicated, easily painting 60 hours a week.
Right.
And it didn't matter if there was a venue for the work or a client for the work. It was simply, I just wanted to be in that space.
Yeah.
And I think when you go all in like that, there's some kind of reaction. So I felt like, you know, it was very quickly that I was asked to be in a gallery and be in exhibitions. And I made a commitment to myself to say yes. Whatever comes along, the answer is yes.
Right.
And I did that for a couple of years, and I was exhausted because I had a lot of great opportunities come up.
Right.
And but it was so fun, and I just haven't looked back. I'm still riding that tiger today. You know, that we're talking 20 years ago now.
Wow,
so.
Nice. Do you find you're an instructor too, right? You teach workshops.
Yes.
Do you find a lot of people having trouble with that leap, like from to like making art for themselves?
I find it's interesting. It's such a deep-seated, common desire, you know, for artists that they really want to be doing it full-time and making a living at it. And it's not easy. It probably took me a good 10 years before I could actually pay all my bills through my art making.
Right.
But it's interesting because it does take more than just a commitment to your art. You do have to be committed to the business side of it as well. And that is such a big part of the equation that I think doesn't get talked about in art school and art education systems, but it's so important. It's 50% of the equation. And I think it's often overlooked, and some artists even feel like it's taboo, like they shouldn't be talking about marketing and selling and things like that. If you're not devoting at least 50% of your time to the business end of your art, you're going to have a much harder time getting your work seen and sold.
Yeah. Was it Art and Fear? Is that Ted Bales. You know who that is? Ted Bales.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Last name, it's not coming to me. But Art Vier, I remember reading that, and that was kind of an epiphany for me, too. There was one story in there about a really successful painter that said he, when he figured out for the next month, he said he might have 6 days in the studio.
Right.
The rest of it was going to be packing and shipping and you know, teaching. He also taught, you know, and all of these things that go along with things. And he might have 6 days in the studio out of the month. But I was like, wow, you really have to do all that. And it,
I mean, you can hire it out, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, once you get to a certain point, because it's important that you're still making your work and putting it out there. And sometimes you get to a point where it's more beneficial to hire somebody to do that side of your business, the marketing and administrative aspects of it, so that you can spend more time in your studio. But I really enjoy that part just as much as I enjoy the painting. And I love connecting with people. And so I spend a lot of time doing communications as far as just following up with people and doing a lot of social media where I can really connect with a tribe of artists. And I really enjoy that.
To me, it seems some of the people I've talked to, actually, I would say a good proportion of the people I've talked to, that's actually part of the reward, or that's a big part of the reward, is the connection with the tribe.
Yeah.
That you have. And it's, you know, you may or may not get paid, you know, you may or may not be paying your bills, whatever. But if you look at the value of that, that connection, that that actually is a real value for people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, if you're not doing that, you seem like you're missing out on a big part of it.
The reward of it, yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Right. Tell me a bit about the videos that you've made. Are those that they've just come out recently, haven't they?
I did a quiet launch of my online art courses in November.
Mm-hmm.
But that was one of the hardest projects I've ever put out into the world.
Really?
It took me a year to develop that whole program. And now it's an online course. It's self-driven. But I designed it. It's the focus is on encaustic.
Mm-hmm.
And I designed it with having it be more like an art reference, something that artists could keep going back to. Mm-hmm. So once you take the course, yes, it's like it's a deep dive overall review of basic encaustic techniques, plus some of my own techniques that I've pioneered. So you can go through the whole course and then have that access to it. You have indefinite access, and you can return to it over and over again if you have a question, or if you didn't remember something, or if you're struggling with a certain aspect of your process.
Right.
It's all still right there, like a reference book or a reference video or program. And that was my intention, was I really want this to be meaty. I don't want it to be just a fluffy arts and crafts experience.
Right.
I want this to be something that artists would find valuable for a long time.
Right.
So I put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and creativity mm-hmm. into developing it because I really wanted it to be exceptional. There's a lot of video content and a lot of tutorial content out there. But I wanted this. This is my audience is artists, and they're visually sophisticated. So I put a lot of time and effort into making it a beautiful experience, as well as a really good educational experience.
Is it directly through your website, or are you?
It's actually hosted by Thinkific, and that's just a teaching platform. It's like Udemy or some of the other course platforms.
Right.
And it's big. The class is big. It's 6+ hours of content and 56 videos. And
wow.
So I needed a platform that could host that and also handle servicing, you know, students as they log on.
Right.
So the way it's set up is you have access to the content and you can log on and view it and experience it anytime, but you don't actually download the videos onto your computer.
Right. Have to store them.
Yeah. So I needed a host that could really support a juicy, meaty class.
Right.
And I like Thinkific. I like the way they're structured. But to access the class, it's actually learn.alishatormey.com.
Oh, okay.
And that'll take you right to the class portal. But you can also get a lot of information on my regular website, alishatormey.com, about my classes, because I also do live classes as well. So I have a portal on my website where you can kind of investigate all the different ways to learn.
Interesting. So you say that the videos were a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. What was the most intimidating? Had you done video before?
Not like that. In fact, I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I don't have a job where I have to be on camera. Mm-hmm. and here, the way that we connect with people now, the videos and, you know, the social media, I'm like so social. I never thought I would be. I just didn't think of myself that way. But I do really like sharing. Like, mm-hmm. I like sharing what I know. I like connecting with people. So the course itself was actually easy for me to get in front of the camera and just share.
Right.
Now, but that's something I know deeply. Mm-hmm. But if I had to get up in front of a camera and share about something I don't know, I would be terrified and probably terrible. But I just know encaustic so, so well that I winged the whole thing and just from start to finish. But it was a lot of work. I had a great video crew. I had three guys in there, multiple cameras set up, and lovely, lovely company to work with. Fluency Films, shout out, because they are so awesome. And they did. If you can go to the portal, that's the learn.aliciatormi.com, and see some free preview videos of the course content, and you can just see what a beautiful cinematic job these guys did. They brought their A game, and I was bringing my A game, and it just ended up being such a great project. Tons of work, but really, really, the end result shows, you know, what went into it. And yeah, I'm proud that that's out there now.
Good, good. It seems like a lot of your process, a lot of your working is public. You know what I mean? You're actually having to work in front of people, which is intimidating to a lot of artists. Were you always okay with that, or did you have to get used to it?
That's funny. It is, when you put it that way, it is like performance, isn't it?
Kind of, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I hadn't thought about it that way, but it is. I am performing, I guess, doing art performance. But I think of it more like I'm sharing. I mean, that's really what it feels like when, and people from all over the world come to my studio, and I'm so honored that they would bother to get on an airplane and go through all the hassle of travel to get here personally and, you know, in person to learn from me. And so I want to reflect that back, and I'm just so eager to share with them and connect with them. You know, I want to meet them with that effort that they've made to come and be with me.
Right. Didn't I just read, and maybe it was your art blog, The U.S. Embassy in, where was that?
Uzbekistan.
That's
I know. Isn't that cool?
That's really cool. So your work will be hanging in the U.S. Embassy.
Yes, it's there right now.
Oh,
in Uzbekistan.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
I know.
Did you go on site to help install it, or did you end up shipping it?
I mean, no. Actually, it's kind of a cool system. It's a program. It's called Art in Embassies. And generally, you apply for it, and then they review your work, and you know, it's a submission kind of thing. But I had a show, and it got written up in a major newspaper. And I think that the ambassador saw the art write-up, and then they contacted me directly. I didn't even have to submit.
Very nice.
So that's kind of really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always thank my lucky stars when stuff like that happens. But the way it's set up, so because they do this, they have their own art handlers come in, pack the work, truck it off, put it on a plane. You don't have to do anything other than fill out a lot of paperwork.
Right.
Yeah, so that was really cool.
Very cool. That's very cool. Do you travel a lot, though? Do you have to go across, like, to Boston? Didn't you just recently have a show, in the last 6 months or so at the Chase Young?
Yeah, Chase Young. It was actually I had two shows last spring there. One was a group show in April, May, and then the other was a two-person show in June.
Okay, that's probably what I'm thinking of.
I just got invited into a new gallery just last weekend.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and I'm really excited. And this one is in New Orleans.
Ooh.
And I've never been to New Orleans.
Which gallery? I've been in New Orleans several times.
Oh, yeah. It's called Gallery Orange.
Mm.
Are you familiar with it?
It rings a bell, but
it's in the French Quarter. Mm-hmm. So I thought, that just sounds really, really cool. It's always been on my radar, my bucket list to go to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. So now I'm going to go.
Perfect excuse.
Yeah.
Oh, New Orleans is awesome.
Super stoked to go there, yeah. Mm-hmm. But so gothic and southern, and oh my gosh, beignets. I can't wait.
Absolutely. The food is phenomenal.
That's what I would really go for. Art and food.
Yeah. Okay. Well, on that note, we're going to take a little break and we'll be back in a few to continue talking with Alicia Tormey.
Hey there. Did you know that you can find Original Lines on both iTunes and Stitcher? So whether you have an iPhone or Android, you can always catch the latest episode. Be sure to subscribe to us, and we love reviews. Thanks.
Okay, and we're back with Alicia Tormey. Okay, so we finished up. We were talking about your videos and some of your different shows and different gallery experiences. I'd like to talk to you a little bit specifically about your art, you know, just like your art-making process. It seems like a lot of the things that I've seen is inspired by natural forms. You're inspired by natural patterns and colors and forms. Do you spend a lot of time in nature, or do you kind of have a vocabulary already kind of built in your head, or how does that work?
When I was younger, I did spend more time in nature. Mm-hmm. But I do, I've always had a fascination with organic forms and cell structure and things that almost seem like they were like a secret level of the world.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And so that's always fascinated me. And then my materials are nature. They're, I'm working with beeswax. Uh-huh. I'm working with Damar resin. So encaustic is the combination of those two materials. And the Damar is a tree sap. People hear the word resin, but they think, and they think chemical two-part resin, but it's a natural organic tree sap.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also work with shellac, which is the excretion from the lac bug. So it's I'm using two insect-based byproducts, the wax. So the beeswax is to the honeybee at what shellac is to the lac bug.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the lac bug excretes this kind of resin, waxy resin type substance to make these straw-like tunnels that it uses to travel around vegetation that it's colonizing.
Uh-huh.
And it's these straw-like waxy resin tunnels that get pulled away, cleaned, dried, and then reconstituted in denatured alcohol. And that is what shellac is. So my work is comprised of, physically comprised of organic material, the lac bug excretion, the beeswax, and the Damar tree sap resin.
Mm-hmm.
And so the organic imagery really just grew from that. And as I became more and more familiar with the characteristics of my materials, I started to really explore and push it into that more organic realm, because it just felt like it made sense to have that organic imagery come forward from that organic material.
And I suppose that most of the pigments you use are just ground earths of some kind or some sort of, they're, most of them are just straight organic materials too, correct?
Many are. So it is pretty interesting that the work is, and I'm working on wood. So it's all from nature. Uh-huh. But a lot of pigments are also chemically based. So I don't mm-hmm. limit my palette to earth-based pigments. And I'm really fascinated by pigments as well. They're from all different origins.
Mm-hmm.
And each one has its own physical characteristics. I do make my own paints.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm using a lot of raw pigments in both my waxes to create colored encaustic paint and also to create colored shellacs. So I basically use shellac like a paint medium as well. And that those colors are derived from different natural powdered pigments.
I work with watercolors quite a lot, and I love Daniel Smith's Primatech line, which is all it's a straight ground lapis lazuli, pipestone. They use different, and some of them are things that you don't even expect, and it ends up with these beautiful earth tones. Do you know, does Daniel Smith sell pigment in that line, or do they sell straight powdered pigments in that line?
So Daniel Smith, which mm-hmm. is a major art manufacturer as mm-hmm. well as an art supply store, and you and I are lucky because as we sit here, there's a main store just down the street,
two
right?
blocks from us.
But they make a line of watercolor paints and they make a line of oil paints. So oftentimes they will have on hand excess pigments that's from their own paint making line. So it used to be that I could go to Daniel Smith, go to the pigment section, and there would be a vast offering. Uh-huh. And I'd usually just take my arm and swipe it down the shelf and put everything in my basket.
Yeah.
Because they make really great high, they have access to great high quality pigments, and I've used them for years. But I'd say over the last couple of years or so, they're weeding out selling the raw pigments. Mm. So when I've gone to purchase pigment, they'll say, oh, that's all we have left. It's being discontinued.
Oh, that's too bad.
I know, because I love it. Mm-hmm. But there are plenty of other makers and suppliers of pigments. But I do really love the Daniel Smith. I wish they would have it as an ongoing product offering, but they don't. And that's my understanding, but that could always change.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I've never worked with encaustic. I'm not sure if the pigments, some of those Daniel Smith pigments granulate so differently. They behave so much more interestingly than other watercolors I've worked with. So if that's true for encaustic, that's a shame if they're not selling them to make the paint. But so you seem to like to kind of collect images of natural patterns. Is that just an ongoing process where you're just kind of always refreshing your visual?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a deep fascination. Mm-hmm. And so I'm constantly looking to science and nature for inspiration, because nobody does color palettes better than Mother Nature. So like take aquatic animal or marine life. Some of the forms are unbelievable. Jellyfish and corals and just all these lovely otherworldly shapes and colors and color combinations.
Mm-hmm. What would you say is the most challenging part of your life as a professional artist with all of these things going? What is
having a social life, having like a private personal life? Most of my life is my art life. And I used to joke that, you know, being an artist is a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. It's not just a profession. It really is a lifestyle, because the biggest asset that we have as creatives is time. Mm-hmm. And that time, when somebody devotes a meaningful amount of time to their creative process, it really is evident in the work.
Mm-hmm.
But that means time away from family, time away from friends, time away from pets. So people who know me well, my inner tribe,
mm-hmm.
they understand I can't come to that party. I'm working. Yeah. Sorry, I can't meet you for lunch. I'm painting. So, over the years, I have just a tight group, small group of friends who get it, and they're patient with me. And, you know, if I can't see them for several months, we're good. You know, we can meet up again, and it's like, hey.
Yep. Yep, I know exactly what you mean. They kind of, it's self-select. It kind of weeds itself out. There are people who can handle that, and then people who can't, and it's unfortunate, but yeah.
Yeah.
Is it lonely? Do you find painting, the painting life, is it lonely?
Yeah, it's definitely a solitary activity. And for about a decade, I had my studio in my home,
mm-hmm.
until I just physically outgrew it. For a long time, for going on 8 years, I've been here at Inscape Arts, where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
Being part of this community here really took that lonely edge off. If you wanted to, you could open your door. Lots of other artists in the area, in the building, might walk by, pop in, say hello, or you bump into people in the hall. And so that added a new level of socializing with other creatives,
mm-hmm.
that was missing when I was working in my home studio.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that. I just thought, wow, I didn't realize what I was missing until I started making those connections here. And so that's been a great asset. And I highly recommend it. I highly recommend plugging into an art community in some way, even if it's just maybe once a week you meet with other artists and do a critique, or even once a month. But just having that connection to other creatives is so invigorating. Uh-huh. Because you think we do share a lot of common thoughts and experiences as artists working independently in our spaces. So when we come together and we can share those, it just reinforces that sense of community, which is really a powerful strength, I think, for creatives.
Yeah, I think the needs of creatives are different. I mean, we're people. We're people too, but we have, we're regular people in some ways. But then there's some ways in which our needs are different. I think there's a certain part of yourself that you have to work from and that you have to spin out of every day that only other creatives really kind of get in some ways. Not that everybody's not creative. I mean, I'm one of those people who believe that everyone can be creative and should be creative. But the more you do it, the more you kind of go down that trail where you have these specific needs. So
yeah, it's nice because we are kind of quirky and eccentric, and within this tribe, within your creative tribe, you're so accepted. It's like, I get you. Yes, I know you have to be in your studio till midnight. Go for it. You know,
Yeah, it's not even questioned. You're just like, okay. Yep, I agree. What's your daily life like? Do you have a day-to-day routine? Do you keep a solid routine, or does it depend on what you're doing?
I struggle to keep a routine, but I do consciously try. But it is one of the reasons why I love being a self-employed artist, mm-hmm. is that ability not to have to be rigid with my routine. However, I know that I'm not as productive if I'm not showing up every day. So I do come into my studio 5 or 6 and sometimes 7 days a week.
Right.
So I have that routine, but I might come in at different times of the day. So I like having that flexibility a lot. So my routine would be, if I get myself out of the house and to my studio, I've fought half the battle already.
Right.
And then once I get to my studio, maybe I don't feel like painting that day, but there's always so much to do. Mm-hmm. I used to think, oh, I'm not feeling the creative mojo. I don't need to go to the studio today. But then I quickly realized I need to just go there every day, mm-hmm. be in that space, even if I'm just going through paperwork or emails, or maybe I just make paint that day. I don't actually make a painting. Mm-hmm. But that's as close to a routine as I get, that I show up, but I'm doing something different every single day. I like to have that flexibility. I can go in when I want. I can leave when I want, unless I'm teaching. That has been a really hard adjustment for me, being a self-employed creative person. When I'm teaching, I am on a rigid schedule with a routine, and then I feel more like I have a grown-up job.
Do you like teaching?
I love it. Yeah.
Oh, you teach mainly adults, right? Not children.
Yeah. I don't teach people under the age of 18 because for my process, I use a blowtorch, mm-hmm. and I just don't feel comfortable having young people, even though I'm sure they would be responsible if they were old enough and had supervision. That terrifies me, the idea of kids with a blowtorch. And with encaustic, you also have to keep your paints. With encaustic, it's a medium where you're working hot and cold. And it's in a solid state or a liquid state. And to keep it in a liquid state, I have to keep it really hot. Uh-huh. So there's also a lot of hot equipment. I have frying pans and, electric griddles going and hot all the time. So having young people around that would really make me nervous.
Did you ever think of going into, it sounds like not, but did you ever think of going kind of the academic track where you actually went into teaching, like in a college setting or anything? Or did the workshops just kind of grow out of your art life from a different direction?
I have to say, every aspect of what I've done with my career, mm-hmm. Has developed organically. Mm-hmm. Same with the teaching. My sister's actually a professional teacher and does it really well. But I never thought I would be a teacher. But I started getting a lot of questions from people. And in the early days, I would just say, oh, here, this is how you do this. This is where you get this. This is how I do this. Or some of my processes are a little more complex. And so it would be lengthy to explain something.
Right.
And I finally realized, well, I should just open my door and offer classes.
Right.
And I did that early on. And I realized, okay, I can't do this all the time if I'm also going to paint. Because it takes up your space. It takes up your time. And so I did it sporadically early on. Uh-huh. And then I want to say about 5 years ago, I started teaching more consistently mm-hmm. and building that out, offering more and more workshops as the demand grew for them. And now I'm teaching full time, really, it feels like, and mm-hmm. painting full time. So
it's, you have two full time jobs at least.
Yes, but I love them both. And so that makes all the difference.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have a question that I try to ask everyone, and I'm going to ask you. Why do you think people make art?
I think people make art for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. I think I make art for a variety of reasons. It's a compulsory, it's a compulsive thing. Like I just feel compelled to be making. I think it's a communication thing, where people are, sharing through their art making or creative process, whether it's writing or painting or music. They're trying to say something.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's a big part of it. And then I think humans are designed to seek and appreciate beauty.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's a pursuit of the beautiful for a lot of art making. So I think that those and probably several others that exist mm-hmm. Are why people make art. And they're certainly why I do.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Let me ask you, where can we find out more about you?
Oh, I have a website. It's aliciatormy.com. I'm all over social. I have Instagram. It's at aliciatormy. Facebook, aliciatormy. Pinterest, which really isn't a social platform, but I'm on there too. If you go to that, you'll see some other weird stuff that I like, uh-huh. Little boards that I've curated, kind of get a little more of an insight into me. And I'm also here in Seattle, in the Seattle area. I'm represented by the Haltz-Bazov Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you wanted to find me physically in here, that's where you would find me. And I think I covered those.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. This has been super.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. Nothing I love more than talking about art.
Well, me too, which is why we're here.
Awesome.
All right. Well, this has been your host, Laura Allen, for Original Lines. And be sure to check us out on Stitcher, iTunes, or any of your other favorite podcasting services. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.